This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive. This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
Go One Ford.
KPFK is a media sponsor of Sound at the Ford Amphitheater.
This is your host, Julio Martinez. You are in for another half hour of Arts in Review. And this time we're rather fortunate. We have the playwright and the complete cast of the play Two Rooms in the Valley, which is written by and performed by Don Scribner. And we're also going to be hearing some music of Mr. Don Scribner, which he freely flows through his show. Right now, stay tuned for Arts in Review. And I wasn't lying. We do have the playwright in the complete cast of Two Rooms in the Valley, which is currently wrapping up about a six-week run at the Actors Forum right in the middle of the NoHo District in North Hollywood. This week, performance just Friday and closes this coming Saturday at 8 p.m. We'll give the ticket number a couple of times before the end of the show, but right now I'd like to welcome Mr. Don Scribner.
Thank you very much.
Your show is definitely autobiographical. You essentially go through your life and what brought you to your present condition of being an actor working in Hollywood, a musician, a composer, and living your life, as the title says, in Two Rooms in the Valley.
The riches of Two Rooms in the Valley.
How did you come up with the idea? How did the show develop?
I've literally been writing the show at the Actors Forum for 20 years.
Really?
And I had to chronologically grow into it. I just knew that everything would come to a point in my life, and this is the point when I opened the show. I mean, it was a significant birthday. It was everything just happened to come like the triangle, filling a triangle, and it just came to its point. It was right.
Now, the Actors Forum is one of many small theater venues crowded around that Magnolia, Lancashire area that we now call the NoHo District, sort of anchored by the Television Academy there on the corner. And I'm assuming then that this was a part of a writing workshop you took part in?
No, it's not. It's just simply a workshop for actors to work on their craft, whatever. I've been writing for years. I've written children's productions that have been produced, et cetera. I love to explore, and I love to think about juxtaposition in life, and I think mine has been one. I've been given an awful lot, and I've also been given a struggle, and they're both equally valuable.
When I was watching the show, I found this very interesting dichotomy of it's very believable. You look, you talk like a man who could be an actor here in Los Angeles. You have a kind of blue collar, you know, Midwest persona that does exude and comes through. And you juxtaposition all of this with the fact that at one time in your life, you had grown out of the hoodlum category and actually got yourself through a teaching college, got your bachelor's, got your master's, became a teacher, and actually became a principal of a school.
Yes, I did. And it was all literally dropped in my lap. I just, to this day, find it astounding that it occurred.
What was the kind of time frame of all of this? I mean, from what the way you describe it, you were well on your way to living a life of non-entity oblivion with your good old boyfriends, and something changed.
I think what happens is you realize that there's something fulfilling in life. And, you know, when I was teaching, I thought it was a beautiful existence. It just wasn't my dream. And when I was a kid, I thought that was a beautiful existence because every moment could be filled with something. There's always a payoff for every step.
Mm-hmm.
And the older I became, the more I realized that I had to follow my dream, which I experienced in the eighth grade. And that was to be right here.
It's very cute. What happened in the eighth grade?
I went to a parochial school, and there was a priest by the name of Father Connold. Ironically, I do not believe he's a priest any longer, but he was an incredible human being. And he had an objective, and he asked me to literally tell a story that I had been telling some kids in class, and he gave me a grade for it. I was disrupting the class, interrupting the class, but he gave me a grade for it because his purpose was to get people in front of a group of people and feel comfortable. And it was such an incredible reward for me that the class accepted that and applauded and blah, blah, blah. And this Kathy Bitzer looked up at me.
The great motivation
heart.
For anything.
Oh, my God. Kathy Bitzer. So I've been following that dream ever since. But it takes time. You run into blocks in the road. You run into things which teach you lessons. Yeah.
It's almost like you fell into going to school to a sort of higher education, almost by accident, and almost because you had nothing better to do.
It's exactly right. This Teachers College was a federally funded program which allocated funds to the state to have people learn to become teachers. There was a time when you needed teachers, truly needed elementary teachers, and it was $40 for 2 years.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ashland, Wisconsin, right on Lake Superior.
It sounds like you grew up there at the turn of the century.
It was close.
The turn of the previous century.
I know. Yes. That was the cost. That's certainly why I became a teacher, because my parents invited me back home and I could live home for free and go to this school, and just worked out.
Did you, in your own opinion, from the way you describe it, you never thought yourself much of a scholar in elementary or middle or high school at all?
Absolutely not. I always felt inferior intellectually. I just felt that there was so much to learn. I just quite literally felt overwhelmed by someone's knowledge and how they could actually take a perspective of anything. Because when you grow up in a small community, your perspective is rather isolated. That was like the Garden of Eden for me. I couldn't imagine anyone living anywhere else. But you move, and then you have a fresh perspective.
Yes. Other places are different.
Absolutely.
So when you did go to college, was studying a struggle? Or did you discover you actually had a mind?
I didn't study initially. I was more concerned with shooting pool and getting some money. I had to work all my life and pay for my education, and so that left me broke, so I found other avenues, and education became secondary. But I struggled through, and as soon as I became a teacher, that's when education gained a fresh perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of the kids. The kids made me feel valuable. The kids made me feel necessary to them. And I thought I better do a good job here.
Did you have your own particular perspective on how you actually teach children?
Absolutely. I want every child that I had that I ever encountered in life to feel comfortable, to want to walk through that door, to want to be a part of it, to want to take something home with them, and to be able to tell their parents something they learned every day, to be able to sit where they wanted to sit. I had very limited structure, but I had discipline.
And all the time you were teaching, your personality didn't change. You still like to go to the pool hall and hang out with
did.
The guys.
Yeah, you know, I go to the pool hall, I drink beer with the parents. You know, I've never changed my lifestyle. It's, you know, because the honesty of it is what is, I think, is infectious to the students. There are no pretenses.
By the way, we are talking to Mr. Don Scribner, whose one-person play, Two Rooms in the Valley, is wrapping up this weekend at the Actors Forum in North Hollywood. I'm going to give this number a couple of times. 818-506-0600. 818-506-0600. And after this next musical interlude, we are going to talk with what finally moved Mr. Scribner to come to Los Angeles and pursue a career as an actor, and also to develop his musical wings. But right now we're going to hear a song, the title song from your, I want to say your first CD, but is it your only CD?
It is my first and only.
First and only CD. And this is Mr. Don Scribner.
Another beer, another yesterday. Same old memories stopping in to say what you had never was. What you found you had to lose. There must be heaven, 'cause I've landed in hell. I know there's angels' cause. I know the devil so well. It was right until we turned that key. First home, a son, finally a family. Her dreams fulfilled until her past moved in. Kill love before it turns to sin. Reached out, grabbed her by the hand. She couldn't live a life she never had. My love was poison in the end. Her past lived on and on. There must be heaven, 'cause I've landed in hell. I know there's angels' cause. I know the devil so well. It took me years to finally see the light. Had I known, I would have fought that fight. Love doesn't run. It should stand strong. Stand strong right by her side. There must be heaven, 'cause I've landed in hell. I know there's angels' cause. I know the devil so well. Must be heaven, 'cause I've landed in hell. I know there's angels' cause. I know the devil so well.
Now, your show, Two Rooms in the Valley, you sprinkle music through it throughout. Every once in a while, your guitar is ever present, and you know, at times you just sit down. But it really is almost an extension of the narrative, because your songs are very autobiographical, and it's a nice flow back and forth. But you do move your story, you know, onward throughout. What finally was the motivation that said, okay, I have this nice, comfortable life. I'm a principal here in Wisconsin, a respected member of the community. What made the big move to Two Rooms in the Valley to pursue a job, pursue work as an actor?
I have to say, I got an awful lot of support from my ex-wife.
Ah.
And a beautiful woman. And the thing is, I reached a point where I had seniority-wise and educationally-wise, I couldn't go any higher. I was at the pinnacle of success in that arena, and it wasn't fulfilling. And I wanted to be here. That was it. So, hence the move.
Yeah. What was your first job? First real job as an actor?
First real job as an actor, I did a video to Mac the Knife. And
oh,
I
really?
Auditioned at Barney's Beanery on a pool table. I did all the pool shooting. I shoot pool. And I wished I played the guitar like I shoot pool. And that was my first job. And ironically, my second job was in an educational film. And I played a school counselor. So I used two of my experiential backgrounds that I seemed to do well at in my first acting gigs.
And you did a sci-fi film, didn't you, earlier in your career?
I did Slave Girls from Beyond Infinity. Yes, sir, I did.
It's on your resume there.
You bet it is. You know, I tell you, I love that movie. It was it gave me a sense of being an actor. I worked on it for, I think, 5-6 weeks and made some invaluable friends to this day on that. And I quite literally would get my name in TV Guide every once in a while. It's a sci-fi, tongue-in-cheek. But it was, I thought, exceptionally well done for what it was. And
was that in the early 70s? That you...
No, that was, I think, 88 or
oh,
88,
I'm sorry.
Of that, yeah.
Yeah. Don't mean to
date somewhere you, in that area, maybe. Yeah.
And you do have the career of an actor. You work in film. You worked in television. And you are still at it. Along the way, you seem to have formed some social alliances and ended some social alliances as things will go. But you do express one thing I found very interesting because I can relate to it in my own life. When you move on to a certain age, certain things are not as possible as they were at other times in your life. And you do a really poignant episode, which is very revealing and, you know, sort of, you know, standing naked there up there, you talk about the fact of meeting a woman, bringing her home, and then realizing as she looks around, she's doing a very negative value judgment of you.
Yeah, and that's a fact, and I certainly didn't blame her for that. It was her perspective. It was what she needed in life, and I just wasn't able to fulfill it financially. And that's.
And she made that judgment based upon the fact of visiting two rooms in
two
the
rooms.
Valve.
And, you know, but ironically, she gave me the title to this show because I see such a value in this. That's my castle, my home, you know, and it's a rich thing. There's an inherent romanticism if it's structured correctly, and your personality fills it, and it's enough for me, but it wasn't enough for her.
At some point, anyone comes to L.A. as an actor, there has to be the reality that I could be here and starve to death the rest of my life. I could have a fortunate accident of fate and become a huge star with lots of money and possessions. And you have to eventually come to realization, whatever, you know, this is what I'm going to do.
You have to accept the fact that the dream is enough and you have to live that. And if you can't accept that the dream, you know, you have interludes, you wake up to the reality that, well, I'm going to have to force myself to live this dream. No, you wake up to the reality that I'm still living this dream. What a fortunate person. That's my perspective.
What are some of the film and television work you have done? I ran out of the house thinking I had everything with me, including your bio, and so I'm going to let you explain your bio.
The most visible movie that I've done is The Cooler, written and directed by Wayne Kramer, a very good friend of mine and a tremendous talent. And I worked with him a few times when he was simply beginning, and he got me this gig, and I worked with William H. Macy, Maria Bello, Alec Baldwin, who was nominated for an Oscar for it, and I worked with them daily for, you know, a couple of weeks, and that's the most prominent film. The last television gig I did was It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes, that's with that short actor.
Yeah. Danny DeVito, however, when I did the show, he wasn't attached to it at that moment, I don't believe, because I didn't work with him anyway. I wished I had.
And I I do a lot of theater. I review a lot of theater. This was my first opportunity to see you on stage. Have you done much stage work?
I've done a ton of stage work. I just haven't done it recently. It doesn't pay.
No kidding.
You know?
Yes.
And as you were talking about reaching a point in life, you reach a point in life where it has to have some value to be able to further you in that living the journey of the dream, you know. And
yeah, yes. By the way, I want to do a short interlude for the station that we are at. You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM. If you're in the Santa Barbara area, you're listening to us on 98.7 FM. And if you're somewhere in the wilds of Wisconsin, you're listening to us stream live over the internet worldwide on kpfk.org. And if you're into podcasting, you'll be able to hear this show all through the next week. Just go to kpfk.org and follow the instructions. And as far as following instructions, I want to let you all know that beginning Monday evening, Tuesday morning, we are going to be launching into the KPFK Fall Membership Drive. And if any of you are out there just dying to see how this organization works, well, we need volunteers beginning next week for every fund drive shift. You can sign up by going to kpfk.org and clicking on volunteer, or by calling our volunteer coordinator, Tony, at 818-985-2711, 818-985-2711, extension 513. And I wish to thank you in advance. We cannot have a successful fund drive without the support of our community, our KPFK community. We're talking to Don Scribner, who wrote and is starring in Two Rooms in the Valley. I have to ask you, you've been doing this now for an 8-week run or 6 weeks?
Six.
Six. Has the show evolved much? Because this, it must be different when you first finally put it out in front of an audience and it's, get that feedback.
Sure. There's evolution in it, but it's only significant in perhaps a discovery level for me, because it seems like every evening the audience, who is in actuality my partner because I feed off of them, is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're giving me little intricacies of spontaneity, and it's becomes infectious for me and moves me along.
I'd like to play a second cut from your CD. This is a little later on in the CD. It has a very intriguing title. It's called Big Fish. And this is the composing singing side of Mr. Don Scribner, Big Fish.
He was a big fish in a little pond. He was the silver lining in the gray cloud. Now he's a nobody. He was a big fish in a little pond. He was the silver lining in the gray cloud. Now he's a nobody. He took a trip out west from his Medistone town. It was a search to find his life's gold crown. Now he's a nobody. It's a stepping up from a nobody's world, being a nobody in a somebody's world. It's a stepping up from a nobody's world, being a nobody in a somebody's world. He was a pick-me-up when I was feeling down. He was the glad to see you, nice to have you around. He was a somebody. His life was filled with friends and accomplishments. He was a somebody. He could have it all, but it was not enough. He had to leave the pond to fight a world that's tough to be a nobody. But it's a stepping up from a nobody's world, being a nobody in a somebody's world. It's a stepping up from a nobody's world, being a nobody in a somebody's world. He said some things take time and maturity. That tells me he's bound to be a somebody. To leave security for obscurity as a nobody. Well, it might take time, but you can bet your life that nobody will someday be a somebody.
Hear the witch steps it up from a nobody's world. There's a nobody in a somebody's world. From a somebody in a nobody's world to a somebody in a somebody's world. From a somebody in a nobody's world to a somebody. In somebody's world.
And that is Mr. Don Scribner. You accumulated some nice musicians working with you there on
I certainly was fortunate in that, yes.
And it's the thing I noticed when I was watching the show is the fact that you cannot really divorce the songs you're singing about with what you're talking about. It's all part of the same narrative flow. It's like an accent to the narrative. It worked quite well. It's nice to have the ability to also express your life, your emotions, your hurts, your pains and joys in music as well as a narrative. The show ends this Saturday. I'm going to do this a number again. It's 818-506-0600, 818-506-0600. Do you have plans for Two Rooms in the Valley 2 or move this show along?
You know, I have no plans for anything. Whatever occurs is going to occur. It's I just live the day.
And the day does consist of you. You are a working actor, and you go off on auditions and wait for the phone calls and make your music. I have to ask, the Actors Forum stage is kind of compact. And you do have it organized at what looks like to be the major room, and through that door is probably your bedroom, if we're going to duplicate it. Does your own apartment look like what you have on stage?
Well, there's a similarity. There is, certainly. I wanted to bring as much familiarity to the stage as I have in my own home. And ironically, that desk was mine at one time. I needed a desk, and I swear, I went out in the back of the yard, somebody had taken the desk and used it for a couple of years or whatever. It was out there. Someone was discarding it, so I brought it to stage. Just the way the show has worked.
By the way, folks, I told Don at the top of the show, a half hour goes by very quickly, and it certainly has. You've been listening to Arts in Review, and we've been talking about Don's very personal one-person show, Two Rooms in the Valley, with music. At the Actors Forum, it was directed by Audrey Ebsinger, who's the artistic director at the Actors Forum in North Hollywood. And you can see it this coming weekend, Friday and Saturday, and it closes Saturday night. And the number to call is 818-506-0600, 506-0600. And we need to make way for KPFK's Midday News, the news you will never hear anywhere else. And once again, the reminder, next week is KPFK's membership drive. We need your volunteer help. Please go to kpfk.org and click on volunteer, or call here at 818-985-2711, extension 513. And we'll be looking for your support next week to support this very valued institution here in the greater Los Angeles area. For Julio Martinez, thank you. For my guest, Don Scribner, thank you. And we'll see you in a few weeks.
With inspiration from last week's From the Vault program, Sound Exchange returns to its own archive for a revisit to the Chinese American Museum, just off La Placita in the heart of Old Los Angeles. Originally broadcast on January 30th, 2004, the program is a guided tour of the then newly opened museum by its development director, Munsun A. Kwok. For a little bit of old Chinatown, join me, Jay Kugelman, your host for Sound Exchange, and my guest, Munsun A. Kwok, at the Chinese American Museum, here noon Friday on KPFK, Pacifica Radio, for more historic Southern California and beyond. Inspired by the Jesuit maxim, give me the child until he is seven and I will give you the man, a UK-based filmmaking team has interviewed a diverse group of seven-year-old English children every 7 years for the past 42 years, asking them about their lives and their dreams for the future. Director Michael Apted, a researcher for the original film, returns with the latest chapter, 49 Up, revealing more life-changing decisions and more shocking announcements. Most members of the original group agreed to take part, speaking out on a variety of subjects, including love, marriage, careers, class, and prejudice. 49 Up opens for a week's run at the New Art on Friday, October 6th, and the first 20 KPFK Film Club members who make their reservations through a live station receptionist will be placed on a guest list, good for any performance.
This is People's Power Radio!